We are here again. Today is week 3 of Lessons from a Toilet Overflow. And today, I want to talk about, the title of this sermon is called The Way Out is Through. And when everything started happening last year, with us having to leave the home and then beginning to uncover more and more things that we had to address, things we had to take care of, which obviously was going to just extend the duration, the time that we were out of the house. I called one of my good friends, some of you know him, Rob Parker, who has been like a mentor to me in church planting since I started early on. And I started telling him, oh my goodness, this is what's going on. This is crazy. And he gave me some advice, which at the time didn't really appear too helpful. You know how that works? You talk to people, you explain the situation, they give you advice, you're like, thanks. What he told me is the thing for you to do is you just need to walk through this. I said, oh, that's like all the wisdom you have for me? I mean, I thought there'd be something a little better than that. You just need to, well, what other choice do I have? Well, of course, I just need to walk through this one. So the more I thought about what he had to say, the more it kind of got lodged in my brain. The more I started just thinking about, well, what exactly does he mean by this? And I could have asked him, and maybe he meant something totally different than how I took it, or how I began to understand it as the season and the time went on and on. But you know what? He is so true. The only thing that I could do in that is I just simply had to walk through it. And so it reminded me of one of Reese's favorite, I guess it's a nursery rhyme or a kid's story that we used to listen to quite a bit. Maybe some of you will recognize this. It's a song that we would pull up on YouTube all the time. There's a couple different variations of the song, but there's a song known as We're Going on a Bear Hunt. You ever hear this one? There's also We're Going on a Lion Hunt, and I think there's a couple other ones. So I thought maybe we could revisit this song today, and there's a couple of motions for us to do together. A little audience participation, get the blood flowing. So this is how it starts. We're going on a bear hunt. So let's all pat our legs together to the rhythm of the story. We're going on a bear hunt. We're going to catch a big one. What a beautiful day. We can all do this. Look up in the air with arms extended. We're not scared. I mean, think of all the excitement here in the beginning of this. We're going to go catch a bear. We're not scared. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh. Now, oh, what does it say, side? Both sides. Uh-oh. Come on, let me see you all do it. Come on. I got to see everyone do it before we move on. Don't be that person. Uh-oh. Grass. Long, wavy grass. We can't go over it. We can't go under it. Oh, no. What do we have to do? We've got to go through it. All right, you're all catching the hang of this. Who knew you'd be singing nursery rhymes when you walked into church this morning? Swishy swashy, swishy swashy, swishy swashy. And this song, so I had Rob Parker's advice. You just got to walk through this. This is the thing for you. You just got to walk through it. And then I had this song in my head. And this song, it's so profound. And actually, the more I started researching this song, the more I found therapists were talking about the profound insights that this song had for toddlers. Think about it. There's long grass in the way. We can't go over it. We can't go under it. Can't even go around it. What do we have to do? And if we want to keep going on this bear hunt, we have to go through it. And so the song continues. We're not going to sing every single verse, but I put up, here it is. So there's the tall, wavy grass. Then there's a deep, cold river. How many of you, especially on a morning like this, I mean, I know you all want to go on a bear hunt, but how many of you, in order to get to the bear at the end of the hunt, would like to just plunge yourself into deep, cold water? Any ice bath fans here besides Ted this morning? We know he's part of the Polar Bear Club. But any of the rest of us? No. Thick, oozy mud? A big, dark forest? Swirling, whirling snowstorm? Kind of like yesterday. I looked out my window and I was like, what in the world just happened? It was sunny and now all of a sudden we're in the middle of a blizzard. And then a narrow, gloomy cave, which obviously at the end of it is when they feel this wet nose, they discover it's a bear, and so they go running through all these different obstacles all the way back, the toddlers in the lion hunt or bear hunt, all the way back to the comfort of their bed. So audience participation question for us. All of these obstacles, all of these challenges, what do they all have in common? Any thoughts on this one? They're not easy. Yeah, of course. Carl? They're unpleasant. Yeah. Who wants to just go walking through thick, oozy mud? I actually had to go out in the snowstorm yesterday because I had to put a box outside, and I was like, get me back in the house as quickly as possible. So they're not easy. They're unpleasant. Anything else we can think of? Exactly, yes. Oh, you guys, like, read my next slide. There's an unknown feature to it. Think about it. You're walking through this tall, wavy grass. The toddlers, you see them go through it, and the grass is taller than them. They can't see what's coming. If you're in a dark forest, you can't see what comes next. Anything else? Other thoughts? What these have in common? Scary? Yeah. Yeah, because you don't know where you're going. It's dark. Some of the thoughts that I had for this one, which I think you already got there. Yeah, it's new terrain. We haven't been here before. There's something about comfort. There's something about predictability. When you know how everything goes, when you've been here before 5 times, 10 times, there's this predictable comfort level that's sort of baked into the rhythm. But when it's something totally new, you start a new job, for kids that go to a new school, you move, you go to a new church, you find a new circle of friends. There's this uncomfortable aspect to all. What's it going to bring? What's it going to look like? It doesn't feel like that sweatshirt that you've been wearing for the past 15 years that you throw on. You're like, all right, now I can just sit on the couch. The couch that has a lump where your backside just kind of sinks right into it because you've been sitting there for the past 10 years. You got your sweatshirt on. You got that lump. I don't know. It's like a hard couch, and you're putting on someone else's sweatshirt, and you're like, ooh, this feels a little different. And so oftentimes when we come across challenges or obstacles, it can become easier to try to find another way around the obstacle. Why would I want to go through this? Ooh, this doesn't feel good. Is there a way around it? Is there a way over it, under it? That's why I love we're going on a bear hunt, because we can't go around. There's no way. There's some place we want to go. We want to keep moving forward on the journey of life, on this hunt that we're on, this hunt for a life that brings us joy and awe and wonder and excitement and fulfillment, satisfaction, the life that Jesus promises of abundance. That's the life of discovering more and going further. And then obstacles come our way, and there's this temptation. Ooh, can we just get around it somehow? Can we circumvent this? Do we really have to get through it? And then there's this wisdom that Rob Parker offered me. Well, the thing for you is you just need to walk through it. Now, we see this truth time and time again in the Bible, and there's one story that I think beautifully illustrates this. It's found, and I'm sure many of us are going to be familiar with this story. It's found in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 9, and right in verse 1, there is a Jewish man by the name of Saul. Ever hear of him before? And here's what we're told about Saul. Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. So there's a group of people who are following this Messiah, Jesus, the Lord's disciples. Paul is a good Jewish man, and he wants none of this. No, Jesus is not the Messiah. So Saul has decided that his goal in life is to eradicate all these followers of Jesus, because they've gotten caught up in the wrong thing. They're following the wrong way. And so he wants to bring everyone back to the right path. So at this point in the story, Saul is very much against the way of Jesus and anyone who would proclaim that they are a follower of Jesus. And so he has these murderous threats. He went to the high priest and he asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way being the way of Jesus, that's what it was first known as, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. I mean, here's what Paul's doing. He's seeking out followers of Jesus so now he can bring them back to jail, remove them from where they live and bring them back to Jerusalem so they can go to jail and then be tried. So as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "Well, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." And the men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but they didn't see anyone. I don't think Saul saw anyone either here. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. And so they led him by the hand into Damascus, and for 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. Some of those obstacles we were looking at before: uncomfortable, darkness, new terrain, unpleasant, uncertainty. It's all baked right into the story, is it not? Here's Paul. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows where he's going. He has his history backing him up, and everything feels comfortable for him. Now, all of a sudden, the lights go out. He's in the dark, and he can't just flip a switch. There's nothing that he can do about his situation. He could resist, could he not? Notice this line here. The men traveling, actually keep going to the next slide, sorry. We're going to actually pick up in verse 17. It says that Saul was then led by the hand. I mean, Paul could have resisted this, could he not? But he allowed himself to be led by the hand, and he comes into the house of Ananias, or he's in a house. Ananias went to the house, entered it, and placing his hands on Saul, and Ananias was told by the Lord, "Go and meet this Saul person. He's blind. You have a message. So you need to go and you need to speak to Saul." Ananias, again, this is uncomfortable because everyone knows who Saul is. Everyone knows that Saul is against the followers of Jesus. So if you're a follower of Jesus and you're told, "Hey, I want you to go talk to Saul. I want you to go spend some time with him." What do you think your first response is going to be? They're like, "No. Why would I? Is he going to murder me? Is he going to bring me back to Jerusalem? What's he going to say? Why would I want to actually go and do an act of kindness? Why would I want to be graceful, compassionate to this man who has ruined the lives of other followers of Jesus just like me?" I mean, maybe Ananias knows someone who has had their life disrupted by Saul. There's probably a very good chance. And yet Ananias was told, and what does he do? He goes and he places his hands on Saul and he says, "Brother Saul." Not the greeting you would expect. Brother Saul, already there's this act of friendship right here. It's kind of odd. This is an odd story, is it not? Saul, murdering, "Hey, brother Saul. So glad you're here. Glad to see you. The Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here." I mean, there's uncomfortableness on both sides of this. The uncertainty and the uncomfortable aspect, it's just all woven into this entire story through every single character who's in the story. And so Jesus has sent me to you so that you may see again and be filled with the Holy Spirit. Now immediately, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes and he could see again. So he got up, he was baptized, and after taking some food, he regained his strength. I love it. It's like totally normal. Yeah, scales fell. Okay, let me just be baptized. Yep, now let me have some food. Everything's good again. What? Like, really? Seems like we're missing a couple lines here, right? It's like, this is just totally normal, totally ordinary, another ordinary Monday. Saul spent several days with the disciples in Damascus, and at once he began to preach in the synagogues that Jesus is the Son of God. At once. There's no time lapse here. He's going to bring followers of Jesus into jail. He's speaking out murderous threats. In other words, he wants to kill them. This isn't a good thing. And now he's blind for 3 days, and at once now he's preaching Jesus is the way. Talk about a life transformation all in the span of a week. And you think a week goes by quickly. Look how much can happen in a week. Look how much can happen in 3-4 days. He spent several days, about a week's time. All those who heard him, they were astonished, as you would be, and they asked, "Wait a second, isn't this the man who raised havoc in Jerusalem among those who call on this name? Hasn't he come here to take them as prisoners to the chief priests?" And then I love this next line. "Yet Saul grew more and more powerful by the day." His transformation continued. There was a moment of darkness, of uncertainty. There was a moment where I'm sure Saul was thinking, well, he then became Paul. So Saul at the time, before he became Paul and a follower of Jesus, must have been thinking, "Will I ever regain my eyesight? Is this going to be the new normal? And I mentioned he could have a choice, and we all have a choice when we come upon an obstacle, when we come across something in life that's uncomfortable and, ooh, could we just go around it? Could we go over it somehow, under it? It just doesn't feel good. I want that sweater back. Please, the couch that I threw up by the street, can we bring it back into our living room before the garbage men come to collect it? I mean, we all have a choice when we come upon an obstacle. We could resist. Nope, not going to do it. I'm going to run the other way. I mean, Paul, he didn't have to be led by the hand. He could have started running the other way. Probably wouldn't have gotten too far, but he could have. He could have tried. He can run the other way. He could have refused the help. He could have refused the message, right? He could have been led by the hand, went into this house. Ananias could have come, brother Saul, and Saul could have said, you know what? Forget you. I don't want to hear what you have to say. No, I've been against you and all these. You guys are dead wrong. Why would I ever want to listen to a message that you? I know the right way. I mean, Paul could have been very arrogant in it. I know for me, when I come across an obstacle and someone tries to give me some advice, I'm like, I know the way. I know what to do. Don't talk to me. Don't tell me what. I know how I'm going to get through this. I don't need your help. I don't know. Maybe you're like me. Maybe you're like help's the very first thing. You're like, I don't need any of that. I can do this on my own. I'm going to just barrel through this thing. Why would I need anyone else to lend a hand or give some support? I mean, Paul could have denied his experience as well. He could have been like, that voice, I must have just been hallucinating. Probably had too many Lucky Charms for breakfast. I mean, he could have just denied it. None of that was reality. You ever have a moment and you think, well, maybe that was God. And there's something deep in your spirit and you're like, yeah, you know what? I really think that was God. But again, you begin to question that a little bit because, no, you know what? I think there's no way that God would speak in this way. There's no way that God would want me to move here, go there, to do this. And so we begin to just kind of push it to the side a little bit, and we deny this very real experience that, no, that can't be true. I must be out of my mind. I must be crazy. If I were to tell this to anyone else, they would just think I was absolutely insane. But Paul didn't, or Saul, didn't do any of this. And as I began to unpack Rob Parker's sentence of wisdom to me, there were three things that I took his sentence of, you just have to go through this. There were three things that I took it to mean. And I kind of parallel it to what happened in the story of Saul. So the first thing, what does it mean for us to walk through our obstacles? The first thing this means is, you enter into the heart of it, but you have to accept reality. You have to accept reality. And I talked a little bit about this last week when we talked about acceptance. But the first thing to do, the first way for us to enter into our obstacles and the challenges, instead of running from them, resisting them, which, sure, of course, in the beginning, many of us, if not all of us, spend time resisting. I'm right there with you on that one. I know when all this started happening with the house, I was like, no, I'm not going to leave the house. There's no way. We're going to stay right here. We're going to just barrel through. There's no way we're going to actually have our lives as disrupted as they say it's going to be disrupted. So whenever an obstacle comes, it's uncomfortable. My first reaction, and maybe you're like me, is to resist it, to try to go around it or over it. I don't want to go through it. It's going to cost too much. There's going to be too much of a sacrifice. It's going to be too painful because that's what obstacles and challenges are. They bring up pain that we've done a really good job of pushing down. And so now to actually have to enter into it, I don't really know. I mean, is there a way that we can kind of avoid that for the time being? I'll deal with that at a later point in time. I know for me in 2021, I had all these expectations for what 2021 was going to bring. I was excited. We had some plans, some goals for the year. And within the span of the first 3 months, all of that was flipped upside down. And so one of the words that we've been using a lot since the start of the pandemic is this word pivot. And so we had to pivot. We had to say, well, this was the expectation we had going into the year, but the expectation is no longer a reality. And so we can resist it, we can fight it, and you spend a lot of energy trying to do that. And you kind of normally just spin in circles, or your tires get stuck a little deeper in the mud or the snow. Or we could say, all right, well, this is reality. Let's accept it for what it is. I don't like it. I don't love it. I wish it wasn't true, but the truth is we have to simply accept it as reality for this season in time. There was 1914, there was a fire at the laboratory of where Thomas Edison worked. 1914, anyone know how old Thomas Edison was? 67 years old, still going strong at 67. I love it. I have a picture of the fire. I mean, complete devastation. Complete devastation. So when someone came running to his house, because he didn't have smartphones back then, no one could text him like, hey, Tommy, your laboratory is on fire. As soon as he heard about it, you know what he said? Here was his response. He looked for his son, and here's exactly what he said to his son. Go get your mother and all her friends. They'll never see a fire like this again. Your life work is going up in smoke. Think about the time, the money that he had invested in this work. It's going up in flames, and here's the first thing he can think to say. Get your mother. Never going to see another fire like this. This is going to be extraordinary. Later, when he was interviewed by the New York Times, two quotes which I think are absolutely mind-blowing. Here's the first. Although I am over 67 years old, I'll start all over again tomorrow. Oh, the passion. I love it. I'm over 67. You know what? I'm going to start all over again. I'm not going to let a day go by. I'm not going to sit there in misery, feel sorry for myself. Instead, I'm just going to pick up again tomorrow. I'm going to get started again tomorrow. And you know what? He never thought that there would be a fire. He never expected it. So he was only insured for about a third of what the entire laboratory and everything that was in there cost. A third. And then here's another quote. I've been through a lot of things like this. Really? A fire that destroys everything? And this is true for all of us. We've all been through our own share of obstacles, our challenges. The time, they were painful. Now we look back on them, and the truth is, you got through it. You're here. You might be limping a bit. There might be some scars left over, but you're here. And you're breathing. And you're enjoying life with all of us this morning in a 57-degree building. Yeah, I've been through a lot. Now, it prevents a man from being afflicted with anew. Now, I didn't know what this word anew meant. Anyone here know anyone got a better vocabulary than me? Please, raise your hand. It's okay. I can take it. What's that? It's a small furry creature. Yes. Sounds like an Ewok from Star Wars. Yes, exactly. So I went to Webster's, but I could have just called Sophia. And here's what Webster said. It's a feeling, I didn't even know how to pronounce it, so I put there, anew. I had to hit that little sound logo when I Googled it. It's a feeling of listlessness and dissatisfaction arising from a lack of occupation or excitement. Think about this. I've been through lots of things like this before. I've been through catastrophes. I've had my share of challenges and obstacles. And you know what? You know the reason why I like them? Because they keep me from being bored. Anyone else? That's the first thought that you have when something comes up that's unpleasant. Or you got to start building again. No. Of course not. Well, maybe. Okay, I don't want to speak for you, but I know for me, that's definitely not the first thing that I think of. But here's Thomas Edison, 67 years old, accepting reality. You know what? I'm just going to start over again. I am going to walk through this obstacle. I'm going to embrace it. There's nothing I can do about it. It's all gone. I can throw it all away and just say, forget about it. I'm not going to work or invest my life in the thing that I actually love and care about, the thing that I truly want. I can just say that season of life is over, or I can begin putting the pieces back tomorrow. So walking through our obstacles, the way out being through, well, the first thing we have to do is we have to accept reality. This is what it is. And now that we've accepted reality, well, now we can begin sorting out what we have to do. Now, here's the second piece of what I thought this, you just have to walk through it means. You have to enter into the feeling of the moment. You have to enter into the feeling of the moment. There are things in life that are heartbreaking. And going around them, going over them, are a way of numbing what you're feeling. And I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but I think this is so profound. When I first heard this, this is something that has just, it stuck with me now for years. In Brené Brown's research, she's found that whenever the amount of, or the ability that we have to enter into, or how much we allow ourselves to enter into the really bad feelings, like pain, there's a direct correlation with how much we're actually able to feel all of the good things in life. So if we can only enter our pain at a level of 3, let's say 10 being the highest, we can only take it to a 3 because we found ways of numbing the 3 to a 10, well, then we're only going to experience joy at a level of 3 as well. So you kind of numb 4 to 7 out on this side of the spectrum, but you also numb 4 to 7 on this side of the spectrum as well. So when we numb the uncomfortable feelings, which, yes, that's our natural response. When we numb them, we're actually numbing the good feelings, the joy as well. You wanted to say something? Foreboding joy. I like that. Yeah, so Camilla said it's avoiding joy because we think about all the bad things that could possibly happen. And I thought about this. I'm like, oh my goodness, like this is so interesting. We think that we can just numb the bad, but in reality, we're also numbing the good. So the way through, or the way out being through, we have to enter into what we're feeling. We have to find a way to get it all out. And it looks different for all of us. We all have our own ways of getting it out. But we can't just let it fester. We can't just let it sit there. And I know we talked a bit about this last week because that just leads down a path that just is not good for our soul. But at the same time, it also prevents us from experiencing the joys that happen in life as well. And I think about Paul and Saul, I guess at the time. What it said about him is that he went without food or drink for 3 days. That was him entering into it. That was him allowing himself to feel the weight of the moment. I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to allow myself just to process this, to feel it, to sit with it. So, I mean, this is all, it's all baked right into this story. Now, here's the third way, or third thing that I thought. We have to be open to what the moment is teaching. So, you just got to go through this. So, first, we need to accept reality, and then enter into the feeling, and then be open to what the moment is teaching us. Remember that line that I said I loved right there at the end? Yet Saul grew more and more powerful. Paul allowed this moment to be a transformative moment in his life. And it didn't just end when he regained his sight. Instead, it continued because he was open to what this challenge, to what this obstacle, this uncomfortable experience was teaching him. So he was open to it, and it allowed his entire life. Think about where he was in the beginning, heading to Damascus, breathing out murderous threats, trying to bring people, followers of the way, to jail, and now he's saying, hey, Jesus is the way. I mean, talk about a complete life transformation. All because he was open to what the moment was teaching him. And whenever you read through the Bible, you'll notice that the moments of greatest transformation happened in the dark. The exodus out of Egypt, the salvation of the Jewish people from the oppression of the Egyptians, it happened at night, under the cover of darkness. The promise of Abraham and his descendants, this promise that God gave to him, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars. When do the stars come out? At night. I don't see too many stars in the middle of the day. Maybe UFOs, but no stars in the middle of the day. We've been looking at the story of Saul. What about Jesus in the tomb. The tomb is a dark, quiet, possibly cold place. Yet resurrection happened right there in the dark. Our moments of greatest transformation often take place in the darkness. Maybe it's because when we can't see our way out, when there's uncertainty, in a moment of being uncomfortable, we find ourselves more open to the Spirit. It's when we're not in that routine, the cycle of comfort, of sitting back on that couch that we've sat in night after night after night, but it's a little more rigid, that we're actually a bit more open to what the Spirit is speaking. I find it absolutely fascinating. The Bible, you would think, is a story of light, right? You think light is good, dark is bad. But in many of these stories, everything is flipped. Because Saul was blind and his life was transformed. Jesus was in the tomb. There was no light. It was darkness, sadness, pain. And yet this was, could argue, the greatest moment in history. When God did his work of salvation, transformation, all happening in the dark. Now, let's flip one more slide for us here. When I actually Googled this quote, "The Way Out is Through," and I found that it comes from a Robert Frost poem. The best way out is always through. And I started looking at this poem, and I started doing some research on this poem. It's from a poem called Servant of Servants. And then I found someone who had this profound insight about this particular line in the poem. It's by another poet by the name of Lady Diane, and here's what she says about this line. "It's not so much that we must endure and accept a situation as a finality. It means, in speaking about this quote, the best way out is always through, it means that to get some sort of healing for a situation, to get out, we must embrace and go through our ordeal wholeheartedly, with inquiry and desire for self-awareness. When we fantasize, when we bemoan every moment of our lives, then we have surrendered our ability, our responsibility to change things for the better." There it is. The way out, being through, the three things that I've learned over the past year of what this means is accepting reality. It's not final. It's not going to be this way forever, but I have to accept this is what it is right now in the moment. And then rather than fantasize or numb, well, let's enter into the feeling of it. Let's just drag it all up and let's express our disappointment and the pain that it brings. And then with inquiry and self-awareness, let's allow this to be a transformative moment. Remember last week? You can either become bitter or better through an experience. Let's allow this moment, as much as it's uncomfortable, to make us better. So, of course, we need to end with Star Wars this morning, because you all saw that one coming. What movie is this for $500? The Empire Strikes Back. Luke is training with Yoda in the swamps of Dagobah. And they're in the middle of a training session, and then Luke says, "You know what, I'm starting to feel a little bit cold." And he notices that there's kind of this cave that he can descend down into. And he asks Yoda, he's like, "Hey, Yoda, what's in that cave?" And Yoda's like, "Ooh, that cave is filled with the dark side." But then here's what Yoda says to him. He says, "In you must go." The cave, it's full of the dark side, but in you must go. And so Luke says, "Master Yoda, what is in the cave?" And Yoda says, "Only what you take with you." In order for Luke to complete his training, for him to be transformed into a Jedi who could save the galaxy, he had to face his own dark side. He had to go into the cave. In you must go. This is true for all of us. Whether you're going on a bear hunt, if you're going on a lion hunt, wherever you're looking to go in life, the way to get there is by facing your dark side. It's by facing the challenges and the obstacles that come your way. And as you descend into the cave, as Luke Skywalker did, what do you bring with you? Or what's in there? Only that which you bring with you. I would argue that the thing or the person, that which you bring with you, is the Spirit of God. You're never alone. As you walk through these challenges, the obstacles that will arise in life, one of the greatest truths is that you are never alone. It may feel like it. Yeah. It will feel like it. But in reality, God is with you. The Spirit is with you every single step. Because God is a God of healing, a God of transformation. God is a God who wants to take our pain, the moments that were meant to destroy us, the moments that can break us, and turn them into something good and beautiful. So yes, in you must go, because the way out is through. But trust that as you enter that cave, the darkness, trust that the Spirit of the living God is already ahead of you and is with you, bringing healing and hope and grace and transformation and peace to all you will face in life. So God, when we talk about obstacles, we talk about challenges, they can drag up some really messy memories. God, some uncomfortable feelings. But God, I pray that we would be a group of people who would walk through the obstacles. God, who would accept where we are, who would accept the reality of the situation, not that we have to like it, but that we would accept it. God, that we would be people who would be able to express our dissatisfactions with what's arising. Dreams that might no longer be a reality in the moment. So God, may we find a way to enter fully into those obstacles and those challenges. And God, I pray as we do so, may we know and feel your presence, God, your Spirit with us. God, may we know and trust that you are a God who longs for our healing. God, who longs for us to experience joy to a 10. And so, God, I pray that as we walk through obstacles in life, may we not feel alone. May we have others who walk through those obstacles with us. And may those challenges, God, may they be moments of transformation. May we look back years later and see those moments of darkness as those moments when you were closest to us and moments when you transformed our lives in ways in which we never thought possible. So may we all become people who are filled with more peace. God, people who are filled with more joy. God, as we discover that the way out is through, may you meet us there and change our lives in ways that we never thought possible. So we thank you for your Spirit that is always with us. God, your Spirit that is always breathing new life and resurrection to all the situations that we encounter through this journey of life. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.